Hi, my name is Gitte Sommer. I'm 51 years old. Today's date is Sunday, February the 16th, 2020, and we are in Fresno, California. Opposite me is my daughter. Her name is Anna Olivia Sommer.
My name is Anna Olivia Sommer. I'm 18 years old. Today is Sunday, February 16th, 2020. We're in Fresno, California, and in front of me is sitting Gitte Sommer, my mother.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, dear daughter, for accepting my invitation to have this taped conversation with me today. And thank you, StoryCorps, for hosting. And Olivia, I have looked forward to this one-on-one time with you with a mixed bag of feelings, because you are so important to me. Baby girl, there is so much mama love here in the air that I'm scared that I will get too emotional to make any sense, so I brought my own Kleenex. Yeah. So, therefore, to remain calm and carry on, I bring my cheat sheets with questions, with a few drawings and some poems. And I have even practiced a power pose. Look at my smoldering eyes. Yesterday, you reminded me of a scene from Jumanji, the movie with that biggest, buffest, smoldering guy saying to himself, "Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry." But still, the Kleenex are here. I would like to frame our conversation within a saying that you already know from your grandparents, that is the idea of gifting your child with roots and wings. I brought you this drawing. And I want you to bear in mind that less than 4 years ago, our small family of three, you, your father and I, the three of us, we decided to embark on an adventure together into the unknown, if you like, by moving from Europe to America. We moved from one continent to another, from Copenhagen, Denmark, to Fresno, California. We sold our city apartment, where you had lived all your life. You had just turned 15 years old. And we packed all of our belongings, including our bicycles, into a container and had it shipped over the Atlantic Ocean. And in a few months, after 4 years of American high school, you will graduate from Clovis West, ready to leave the nest as a golden eagle. I would love to hear you talk about your thoughts of your next big step in life. This time moving away on your own from California to the big city of New York to go to college. So, roots or wings, would you like to first talk about where you are from, your roots, or where you're going, your wings?
I think I should start talking about my roots. And they definitely are very Danish. Even though with the DNA test we took, it turned out I was a little bit Italian too, but majority Danish. So I lived in Copenhagen for 15 years. And I had the same 15 friends my whole life. I was talking to Rosa last night, and we talked about how we'd known each other for 18 years. And how when I moved, like, everything was just gone. And when I got here, like, I knew nothing. I barely knew the language, and I didn't know anybody. And how, you know, my entire identity was just gone. I mean, I was a model. I was an author. I was a black belt. And I wasn't any of those things in America, so I had to rediscover myself. And I think that's been so important to my wings. I guess that's where I developed my wings. And I guess that I had to tear up my roots in order to actually develop these wings. And I think if I hadn't moved, I probably wouldn't be the person that I am today. So I'm grateful for that every single day.
How would you describe yourself today?
independent, mature, bold, beautiful Bernard woman. I dare to do things. I don't like to follow rules. If I get an essay prompt, I do everything I can to answer the prompt without answering it. And
what does that mean?
Like in English, my teacher loves and hates me for it. But every time we write essays for AP Lit, I love to just rebel. Like if he tells us we need to do 5 paragraphs, I do 10. Or if he tells us that we can only do 1 sentence thesis, I do 3 sentences. And it pays off. And I think that's important too.
Where do you think that comes from?
My mom. When you applied for that job interview and you like wrote a completely different resume, and when you wrote to dad, and it was the newspaper article, and he said that he was looking for a woman who was ready to kelge in Frederiksberg, and somebody to do pillow fights with in the bedroom, and that he was a blonde biologist. Even though his hair is very black, and how you sent back a picture of you took in Japan. Were you drawn? Did you draw on like a little nisahu? Yeah, and then you'd written 3 measurements, and it was the measurement of your head for your brain, and of your chest for the size of your heart, and your stomach for the size of your...
Actually, the angle.
The angle. Why?
Because back in the Victorian age, you know, the only glimpse that the male could get of the females that were like they would almost faint if they saw an angle. So I thought it would be a little provocative like that.
I definitely think that's where I get it from.
I'm surprised.
You're surprised?
Yeah.
What?
I didn't think of that relation.
Oh.
But I'm flattered.
Yeah. And I mean, with you cutting off all your hair and just being so different, and like daring to go a different path. Like I think that's definitely inspired me too. Because I come from a very academic family. And like I am going on to college, but I know for a long time I just wanted to write after high school. Like I just wanted to be an author. So I think the fact that like you supported me in that, but that you also provided the roots, I guess, for me to branch off into my own path. Yeah.
I know you want to be a storyteller. Tell me about your 3rd year.
Well, it listens a lot when I'm just going on about my everyday life. And whenever it hears something that like catches its attention, it just folds out and scribbles the idea into my backpack. And it's prompted me to write my first novel. And I'm working on my 2nd novel. And all the poems and short stories that I've gotten published and my artwork and stuff like that. I think stories are just kind of... I mean, I would say that I'm drawn to stories, but it's like stories are also drawn to me. Like, I just pick up on them. I can't really explain it. It's just my 3rd year.
Could you try to explain it? I'm curious. Yeah. Where is it located, that 3rd year?
Well, it's not specifically located anywhere. But it's like...
But
you
how
know,
do you notice that it folds out?
Right. So I don't. It's like in hindsight, I guess. Or it's like either like in the moment I'm like, this is good. But like from my years working as a model, a fashion model for Le Management, I like didn't notice it at the time, but during the whole thing, my 3rd year was just picking up on the world of fashion, the fashion industry, the other girls, you know, the bookers, the jobs, the photographers, everything, which is what I'm using now writing my 2nd novel about like how terrible it is and also how like how damaging it is, I guess, to young girls. And I'm only able to do that because my 3rd year was there and listening to it. And, like, all the scenes from the stories, like, inspired by things I've heard or seen or experienced. And I think that's when it happens. Like, when I hear something that's, like, unjust or it's, like, it's just, it's not, like, it's something I need to share if that makes sense. Like something I experience or hear that I need other people to experience with me. Mm. Yeah.
Let's go back to when you felt kind of uprooted.
Yeah.
When we relocated from Copenhagen to here. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Can you be a little bit more specific?
Yeah. Maybe you can describe what you were like as a child.
Well, I'm an only child with everything that comes with that. So that's also, I remember I used to be like the policeman. Remember that? Mm-hmm. In like kindergarten grade?
Yeah.
I was so annoying. I was such a spoiled little rat. And I was definitely an introvert, and I preferred.
Do you remember that yourself, or is it because we have told
you? I remember that. No, I remember it. Okay. Like, yeah, I remember that whole thing.
So can you give an example?
Well, it was like whenever I would experience anything that was like unfair, my whole body would just ache and be like, this is not just. I was definitely a snitch. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I would rat on all the other classmates if like they did something that they weren't supposed to do, which is why I got the name police officer. Yeah, but then I got a little bit older, and I was definitely, I preferred my own company, introverted. I would play video games with my friends and just talk to them on hours for on Skype, but like I wouldn't actually see them in real life. And then I started growing. I became taller. I got scouted. And all of a sudden, you know, I had status and people would actually like to be friends with me and talk to me. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. Like, this is a whole new world. So I started like hanging out with them a little bit more. And I became influenced by them a lot for good and bad. And, you know, it became about the name of the brands and going out and partying and drinking and, you know, Instagram and this perfect image of myself. And then I moved, and that also separated myself from all those people who prompted those sides in me. And it took a little bit of time for it to come out of my system, but it did eventually.
For the better or for the worse, what would you say?
For the better, definitely. Mm. It's freeing.
Mm. Talk to me a little bit about all your karate practice from from you were 7 years old till we left.
Yeah.
That was 8 years of karate.
Yeah, that was definitely a love-hate relationship. Well, it started because my dad said that pretty girls needed to defend themselves, needed to be able to at least. So I started out not really knowing what I was doing, and, you know, made some friends, and that was kind of fun, but it wasn't really serious, I guess. And then when I was 10, I won my first national championship, and I was kind of like, it like ignited a fire in me, I guess, of some sort. And a couple years later, I was taken out for the elite varsity team, I guess. And all of a sudden, practice got a lot more intense. It became a lot more serious. I had to be a lot more dedicated. And then I started winning for real. And I became really good. And, you know, I would travel to other countries and win. And I would start doing the fighting aspect of it, too, which I know you loved. Mm,
the kumite part, yeah.
And somehow I was good at that too, even though I never really practiced it. But I hated practice. I hated it because I was, what, 5'8", 100 pounds. I mean, I was fighting with these 6'4", 200-pound, 300-pound men who just throw me into the floor, and I would never be able to take them down because, like, you know, it wasn't exactly an equal relationship. And it was so hard because I was so skinny, and I don't know. I kind of fell out of love with it a little bit. But then I started coaching myself, and I became the sensei or senpai of the, like, 30 little ADHD 10-year-olds who just run around, my little chickens. And that's kind of how I got back into it a little bit. But I'm glad that we moved when we did because I was definitely growing tired of it towards the end.
Yeah. you're talking about being skinny, and you know that's a sore spot with me, with my history of eating disorder. Can you tell me if that affected you somehow and how you view yourself and your own body image?
Well, I remember that, like, talking about calories was just always a taboo in our household. Mm. Like, it's not that I, like, wanted to talk about it, but it was more, like, whenever anybody else talked about it, like, at school or when Dad talked about it, I would, like, tense up. Mm. It was never anything that I thought about. I mean, I know I used to be chubby, and I know that Fatma, my dad's mom, used to say that you needed to feed me less because I really like food and I would just eat it. But then I grew and I did a lot of sport, so I just lost a lot of weight. So I guess that affected my body weight too. And I remember always just being cold. Mm. That's probably the main thing I remember about it. Mm. But I remember it was weird when I started, you know, after I got my period and after I started becoming a woman, like, the feeling when your thighs, like, hit each other, I hadn't felt that for so long. I remember that was, like, a weird feeling. I was like, oh, my God, like, it feels like that.
You haven't felt it for so long? So
no, I hadn't. Like, from when I was, like, 12 to, like, 15.
Mm. Okay,
good. So I'd forgotten what that felt like. Mm. And I remember it was weird, like, growing out of my old clothes because I'd fit it for so long. But that's all that really was. It was just a new stage in my life, I guess. Mm.
Did something change when we moved here?
Yeah, because I wasn't a model anymore. Mm-hmm. So, like, I would never say that I felt a pressure to lose weight or stay skinny or anything like that. But the fact that, you know, all of a sudden I wasn't the measurements that I needed to have, I could have imagined that would have been taken more of a toll on me if we'd stayed in Denmark. Mm. And I was still, you know, working as a model. Because I know coming back mm-hmm. and talking to my old colleagues, a lot of them got fired when they entered that stage because we were all so young, you know, we were just girls. Because their waist or their hips were too wide. Mm. And they were not wide at all. They were maybe like 90, 95 centimeters. Mm. Which is also what I'm writing about, you know, that side of it. Yeah, for sure. So the plot of the story is following a young Danish girl whose name is Emma. And basically every single chapter is from a different point of view. So it's never Emma's point of view. It's like her mom's or her dad's, her bookers, her friends, her coach. And she starts out being scouted at a very young age, where she obviously fits the measurements. But then as she grows into her sport and puts on muscle mass and, you know, gets really good at her sport, then she grows out of those measurements. but since she's, like, already built her base, her following, she talks to her booker about revolutionizing the industry and potentially making, like, the quote-unquote normal, which is obviously the underweight norm in the fashion industry, like revolutionizing that and making it normal to be normal. So there's not, you know, right now there's like the normal and then there's the plus size. Like there is no in between. There is size 32 and 34 and maybe 36. And then it's like 40, 42, 44. But there is no 38, 40. And, you know, the booker agrees that that would be possible. But as she kind of gets into it, she realizes that she has to build more of a base to really, like, get, you know, going on this, which just doesn't happen because she has to be skinny for that. So obviously she develops an eating disorder. And then the very final chapter, it's finally from her point of view. That's basically the gist of it. Yeah.
And you can relate back.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, write what you know. It's definitely Ugangspunkt,
the starting point.
Yeah, in me. Mm. So, yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your wings?
My wings, mm-hmm. Yes, I would love to.
Yeah.
Well, I am a golden eagle from Clovis West. And I think you prepared me really well for my takeoff. I know a lot of my friends, like, they don't know how to cook, they don't know how to do laundry, they don't know how to put their bed sheets on, they don't know that cleaning isn't just putting things away, it's also, like, dusting off and, you know, vacuuming and letting in some air and stuff like that. And I think with thinking for myself, that's probably the single most important life skill that you taught me. I mean, I know from when I was very little, you know, if I wasn't allowed to do something, I'd be like, why? And then you'd tell me. I know a lot of people, like, when they were small and they'd be like, oh, why can't I do this? Their parents would be like, because I said so. And you were never like that. You always, like, you treated me like an adult from when I was a child. And you would have really rough conversations with me. And you wouldn't be afraid to show me that, you know, adults can fight too, and they can be frustrated and confused and sad. And I think that's prepared me really well for what adult life looks like. Like, it's not you turn 18 and then you just know, or you turn 40 and then you just you just know what your life is supposed to look like and what you want to do. And having it all, you know, figured out. And I think that's part of the beauty, too. The, like, when you take flight, you can just kind of let the breeze carry you away.
And where will they take you? Your wings?
Well, right now they're going to take me to New York, New York City. And I'll be spending 4 years, at least, going to Barnard, which is so exciting. It's probably the most exciting thing I've ever had happen to me. I was lucky enough to get in early decisions, so I know, like, I have that security of knowing where I'll be going, where I'll be taking off to. And my current boyfriend lives there also, Jonathan. We've been doing long distance for about a year, so that's going to be a new chapter of my life, on my own 2 feet, or my own 2 wings, I guess you could say. Do you want to ask something more specific? Or?
Yeah. Tell me what makes you smile today.
What makes me smile today? It's a 3-day weekend. and I'm ahead of all my schoolwork. I feel accomplished in my creative process. Right now, I'm at the top of the mountain where, you know, it feels good to be able to look over everything and look back on everything that I've done. I'm preparing my AP art portfolio and I love it. Like, that definitely is the highlight of my day. And with my writing, I love sitting down with a cup of tea at night and just kind of ending my day by going over my plot and, like, adding details and outlining a chapter, or, you know, like, having, like, a quote unquote interview with a character or something like that. And then, you know, talking to Jonathan. Definitely also adds a lot of joy.
Would you like to talk a little bit about dannelse versus uddannelse?
Yes.
And maybe try to explain it, even though we find it hard to translate these two Danish terms.
So I would say that dannelse and uddannelse, like, they definitely hold hands. So if you translate it directly, it would be, well, dannelse doesn't have a translation, but uddannelse is education. And I would say dannelse is, like, the education in life, like an education in other cultures and languages and people, different music, different writings, stuff like that. And I would definitely say that dannelse is traveling, which I'm blessed enough that you have made me go many places in the world. And dannelse to me is becoming, it's like self-improvement, like becoming a better person also, I think. By broadening your horizon, you also broaden your own view of what humanity is and what love looks like. And I think being dental is being a whole person and being a loving and caring person. And that's definitely the journey that I'm on, you know, the journey of dannelse. That was moving here, was journey of dannelse. We didn't know if we were going to stay, you know, because the visa was only 3 years. So I think we went into this, the journey to America, with the mindset that this was going to be dannelse, if anything. And that's definitely still, I don't think you ever, like, you go on the train of Danelse when you're maybe, like, a young adult. And then I just don't think you get off.
Right.
I don't think you're, ever, I don't think you're supposed to get off anyway.
I like that.
Yeah. Mm. Do you want to add anything to that?
No. Okay. Is there something about you that you think no one else knows?
No. I like to be very open about everything that's going on in my life. I like to be openly insecure and share my doubts about myself with those closest to me. And, you know, being editor-in-chief, for example, I like to set the example for my staff by openly being vulnerable with them. And sharing when there's something that I don't know if I can do, or if there's something that I'm doubting myself about, or if there's something where I need help, like reaching out. I don't keep secrets from my closest friends and family. So, no, I wouldn't say that.
Who influenced you to do that?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think partly it's you and Dad. You know, you've always been very open with your feelings about me or around me. And I think you always crying.
Yeah.
That showed me that vulnerability is strength. And being vulnerable is being confident in yourself enough that you dare to set the example by sharing your insecurities and showing those around you that that's not weakness, you know, that that's a form of strength too. And I like to do that because I know, and this is going to sound, this is going to sound a little bit, cocky, but I know that people look up to me. So I like to show them that just because, you know, they see me as whatever they see me as, that doesn't mean that I'm like that all the time. And just because, you know, I have my days where I feel good and I look good, it doesn't mean that those days are reality every day. And just because, you know, some of my paintings, you know, have been exhibited and they're beautiful, doesn't mean that all of my paintings are like that. And I don't know. I think it's so important to show other people that life is also having doubts about yourself and what you're doing and what path you're taking. And I think that's critical thinking, to be able to question what it is that you're doing and what path you're taking, if that's the right one. I think just following something blindly, that's dangerous in many ways. So I think maybe it's just kind of a mix of the people that I look up to and you guys as my parents. Yeah.
Thank you. Do you want to share more about your doubts and what you question about yourself and your path?
Well, I think the headline of it is probably, is this good enough? Am I good enough? And I know the answer. I know that, like, this is my equation and it equals yes. But sometimes I just need to find X. And that is applied in many, like, sub-mods. Where it's, you know, in my writing, sharing my plots with you, I feel incredibly vulnerable. You know, is this good enough? And I don't know if you're lying to me, but usually you say yes. Sharing my art with my teacher, is this good enough? Is this going in the direction that I want it to go in? Sharing my designs and my spreads for the yearbook with my advisor, you know, is this the direction we want it to go in? Does this reach, you know, the level that we've set for ourselves? Is this good enough? Am I a good enough editor-in-chief? And I think the gene of being a perfectionist, I wonder who I get that one from.
Don't look at me.
But I'm definitely a perfectionist. But I'm also my dad's daughter. And he's definitely the...
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah. He's very good at seeing it in the helicopter point of view, I guess you could say, where it's not so like going into detail about it. So, yeah, I mean, I want to do big things, and I know it's naive, but I want to impact or change the world in my own little way. And I think that's why I keep asking those questions. Am I good enough? Is this good enough? Because even though it may never be perfect, then at least it's going to take me in the right direction.
Do you think that has resonance with people around you? The question of insecurity and being good enough?
I mean, definitely. I think that's a very universal doubt to have about yourself. I think maybe because you gave me so much confidence throughout my roots, that the fundamental answer, the fact that I have that I can put, you know, two lines under it and be like, this is the answer. I don't think everybody has that. And that's why I kind of want to show people that you can still be looking for your ex and have that answer, if that makes sense. Like, that's why I want to share my insecurities, my doubts with people. Yeah,
I told you that I brought some little drawings and some poems, and a lot of them are from the Danish poet Piet Hein, who makes in English "Grooks" and in Danish "Grook." And this one, I don't know if you know it. Maybe I could get you to read it. Mm-hmm. It's only in English. I couldn't in Danish. I couldn't find a translation for it. Can you read it out loud?
Der en ro, og den beror på, at du tror mod det du tror på.
Mm-hmm. I would like to pass that on to you. And he did these little like doodles always with his little grooks. There's like a saying in Danish saying that grook is from grin and suk melded together. Grook. But Piet Hein never acknowledged himself that that's how he said, I just invented this word. I grabbed it out of nothing. It doesn't have a specific meaning. But it seems to be like the happy and the sad part kind of merged together. Can you try to translate it, the little poem?
Yeah.
Oh, grook.
Yeah. I think the gist of it is that the peace in life is knowing that you're faithful to what you believe in. Like, you have integrity. I don't know how you would translate that.
Well, I agree with you. I wanted to gift that to you. And there are lots of those.
That
I especially love, I'm just going to read it out. It's the living is a thing you do, now or never, which do you? I love that one.
I like this one. Love while you've got love to give. Live while you've got life to live.
Mm-hmm. I like it even better in the
Danish
translation.
Yeah, it's so
because
good.
It's more subtle, and because they wanted it to rhyme, then they lose some of it in the English translation. Yeah. Anna, when have you felt most alone?
When you leave for 9 days and there's no more food in the fridge and I have a cold and I have to get myself up for school in the morning. I like when that alarm rings in the morning and my throat hurts and I know I have to get up, make myself breakfast and get ready. Mm-hmm. I can feel that I'm growing up. Like that's adulting, you know.
Do you think that's foreshadowing of the college?
Oh, yeah.
The college thing in the
Definitely.
Future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How will you channel that sense of comfort when you're at college?
Well, I luckily have a mother-in-law, I guess you could say, who is great at cooking comfort food. So I'm definitely going to be using that as a lifeline. But I hope to create a network of other bold, beautiful Bernard women who can be there for me when I need the other lifeline to pull on. And then, of course, FaceTime is a great invention. So I'll probably be FaceTiming you and crying about life when it knocks me down a little bit.
Yeah. So would you say that food is part of your roots?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Some specific foods?
Yeah, I was going to mention some Danish foods. Okay. Flæskesteg, farmors frikadeller, risengrød, julekager. I think that's probably.
And is it because eating this kind of food gives you a certain feeling or sense inside? Or
Well, first and foremost, it tastes good. You know, that's kind of important. But I think it also, like, it's just the taste of, like, the holidays and, like, the taste of, like, it's really cold outside and we haven't seen the sun for 3 months. But here's, like, a lot of sugar and fat together. And I don't know, I think ever since we moved, you said this also, that, like, we feel closer. Like, we feel more Danish, if that makes sense. And, like, when we eat this, it's like, wow, like, now we're Danish, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to bring up Piet Hein again. He's talking about hyggevær.
Oh.
There is one Danish and one English. They're not the same. It's not a translation, but it's the two at the bottom.
It's called saturation in English.
Well, it's not a translation of the same one.
Oh,
it's a different one.
Gotcha.
So, but maybe you can read the hyggevær.
Yeah, and, in Danish.
Yeah.
Hyggevær. Lyst syn på en mørk dag. Skyerne drypper og driver af drær. Det plasker og pjasker fra hatte og klær. Hvor er det hyggeligt indendørs vejr.
Mm-hmm. And what is the gist of that?
Hygge.
Yeah, the Danish hygge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that you have to become cozy indoors because the weather is so terrible.
You have cannot to make the be best outside. Of it, yeah. You know?
And that was part of why we actually wanted to move to California, because the sun is out and the sky is blue here a lot more.
Yeah.
And maybe you can finish off by reading the saturation one with about the rain.
The heavens are draining. It's raining and raining. And everything couldn't be wetter. And things are so bad that we ought to be so glad, because now they can only get better.
Yeah. And I think now that you're moving to the East Coast, to New York, you know, you might experience some weather that is a little bit similar
to
the Danish. Not so much rain, but you will feel the cold over there.
Yeah.
Just be prepared for it. Yeah. Anna, to finish off, has your life been different than what you had imagined?
Well, I mean, it wasn't exactly in the cards that we were going to move across the Atlantic Ocean, you know. So I think that definitely took a bit of a U-turn. But the main road, me writing, expressing myself as a storyteller, that's, I haven't gone astray yet from that. We'll see. So I think this is just like all paths lead to Rome, I guess. This is just another path. It's a little bit more westward, but it's the same direction I'm heading in. Flying in. One should say.
Yeah. What routes would you want to pass on?
Hygge. Making the best of it, like that Danish mentality. When it's like, what would that be in Fahrenheit? Like 60 degrees Fahrenheit outside. Like when it's like 15 degrees outside and there's sun, you go outside and you sit in a bikini and you take all of that sun in. I think being vulnerable, if and when I have kids one day, showing them that being an adult is not equivalent to just knowing everything. And just, I'm going to try to be as happy as you've shown me that you can be with what you have. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, what about you? How do you feel about your life right now after we moved?
Yeah, we have 2 minutes to wrap up. And you know that your father for a long time has been talking about there will be an empty nest.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely know I will be the empty nester there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited on your behalf that you will spread your wings and take off.
Mm.
But because we moved here and I got a chance to be so involved with you, to me, my life definitely changed a lot, because here, as a parent, you have the possibility, if you have the opportunity to be so involved with your child in high school. That's very, very different from Denmark, where you are an adult already going into, or considered an adult going into high school. So I feel so fortunate and so happy that we have had these 4 years together. And I wish you all the best. And I want again to thank you for doing this, and I look forward to listening to this recording probably on the patio in the shade with a lemonade and you will be off to New York.
Thank you. Big things.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.